Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
11 minutes. 11 minutes of recorded
bollocks.
Guff.
Absolutely. 11 minutes of sheer.
Hey, what's new, eh? What's
sheer shite.
How's that different?
Stick that out. Tim's flagship episode 314. I'm the host Jamie, and I'm joined by Martin Melly.
Yes.
And Stephen.
What's happening?
Oh, well, nothing.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, literally nothing's happened because the football's cancelled. Well, the football has been paused because there has been a national tragedy, and the football authorities thought best thing to do after the national tragedy was to
panic.
And what they didn't do was maybe take a minute to realise that people like football, people want to go to football. If you are sad because something happened, it might give you an opportunity even to switch off and enjoy the football if you're that way persuaded. If you're into kings and queens and all that sort of stuff, you might want to go and celebrate or take your mind off it. But what they did was they panicked and just cancelled everything. And I think, Stephen, that's a gross overreaction.
Oh, of course it was. That was played out. That was proven, in fact, by the fact that nothing else was cancelled. It's only football that was cancelled on the weekend. There were even other sports. It's not even as if, all sport is off, but you can still go to the cinema or you can go to the pub because, you know, it's a time of reflection. You might want to go out and either celebrate or whatever, right? No, you could do anything apart from go to the football. You go to rugby, cricket, anything. There was Formula One on the weekend. I know that's not in Britain, but I mean, a lot of British people watch it. So I really don't understand why football was cancelled, because I know the reason, right? It's a very obvious reason that football was cancelled, but I still can't understand why. What's the correlation?
No.
There's no correlation between there being this national tragedy and disrespecting it by carrying on with football. It's completely absurd to me.
I think there's a situation, Melly, down south where Prince William, I'm not too up on the princes, but one of them has an affiliation with the FA, the English FA. So having a kick about, well, he's meant to be doing duties or whatever, I can understand the tie-in there. Maybe the English football might want to cancel. Or, well, maybe not actually, because the official guidance came out from the government, I think it was. And it was basically like, I was actually quite surprised by the official guidance, because it basically said, feel under no obligation to change any way of life, feel under no obligation to do even anything. It wasn't even, we will observe a minute's silence at whatever, or make sure you wear black armbands. The official guidance was, look, life goes on and you just need to continue. And that's not really what happened. I mean, you could look at it from another perspective. If you were this way inclined, see, you were into like kings and queens and dukes and knaves and princes
and
wizards and masters of coin and all that.
If you say wizards or lizards?
wizards. If you're into all that Game of Thrones type stuff and you wanted to have a joyous occasion about it, we're better than, say, Ibrox Park to do such a thing, you know, and they'll feel really left out by it. But I wasn't surprised, though, when the football was cancelled. And I wasn't surprised either, Stephen, when the SFA or the SPFL or whoever it was waited till the English made their decision.
Oh, of course,
because that was basically what they were looking to do, wasn't it? They don't have any independent thought. They just wanted to wait and see what England did.
I think Scottish football was in a somewhat unique position as well, because they were going to have to deal with a certain people, in inverted commas, right? Regardless of what happened here, what we were faced with was, when the news started coming through, not the news, but the reaction to it, and as it got towards the weekend, what we're going to do about the football, there was some chat there about how it was going to be left up to the individual clubs to decide, and I was looking forward to that because we all know what would have happened there. I was really looking forward to a potential scenario where Celtic played, and Rangers didn't, out of respect, leaving them a potential 8 points behind and months and months and months of greeting about fixture congestion, which we're all faced with now as well. Though, see, joking aside, that's the sinking boat we're in now because of this nonsense. We're all now in a extremely tight schedule.
It'll be next year before the games are played.
It's already an extraordinary season in that regard. It's a World Cup, so we're tight as a butler's cuff here when it comes to actually fitting these fixtures in, and we've gone and just basically hamstrung ourselves trying to squeeze this extra one in. I don't know what's going to happen this weekend coming. By the time you see this, some resolution may have been struck, but I'm led to believe
going ahead, apparently.
It's going ahead dependent on police resources, which we don't know.
Well, I watched a thing on the news, and again, this might be redundant by the time podcast comes out, but I watched a thing, or I heard a thing on the radio today that says, like, they're expecting 2 million people in London, and they literally don't have the police to accommodate that many people, so they're going to have to pull police from all over the UK to help police this, but also there's sporting events on all over the... It's almost like we're completely unprepared for something we all knew was going to happen at some point in the last 20 years.
That's the problem, isn't it? We all sort of thought, right, when this does happen, it's going to be, there will be something in place where everything either goes or it all stays. Yet football's the thing that's went and everything else has stayed. So if they kind of painted themselves into a couple, well, it's weird, they backed themselves into the corner here because they can't really cancel another set of games this weekend, but it probably should be this weekend that would be the one that would get cancelled because that makes more sense. But to just fly in there and go, I'll cancel these games, and then everybody else, they're just going to keep going because that's the protocol. It's again, the guidance and governance.
Is the funeral, is that next week
Monday
then?
Monday.
Right,
Monday.
So what you're going to have is, on the weekend that the national tragedy happened, you're going to have no games of football, but you're going to have lots and lots of games of football on probably the more, is it important? I don't know, but you know what I mean? The more significant weekend, you're going to have the full calendar of thing. And I think the elephant in the room here is that there was probably an attempt to avoid protests and songs that didn't go along with the prevailing wind of where people want us to be and how people expect you to feel about these things. There was clearly going to be protests, which 100% should be allowed. If you I felt that I didn't even need to say that, but this is the internet, and sometimes you have to say things that don't need said.
Protests are a bit too heavy, isn't it? It would have been people interrupting the minute silence. Is that...
There would have been much more than that.
There would have been songs, but I don't know if MD would have been... There would have been a mass gathering of protest.
No, wouldn't have been a mass gathering of protest, but I mean, at the games, you know, people... I think what they want is for these games to go ahead, as you say, minute silence, everyone observes it. Ibrox Park will do their thing with banners and all that sort of stuff.
They would have been.
So, but what they want is, they want that message going
cannons.
Out. Look, any excuse to wheel out the cannons, paratroopers and guys abseiling. That's what they'll do, and that's the sort of prevailing attitude that people want. But what you're going to have is, not just at Celtic Park, not just for the Celtic game, but other football stadiums around the country, you're going to have people, Liverpool as well, that are no buying into this sort of narrative. And I think there's an element of, God, we can't, how do we stop this happening? When that shouldn't be the attitude at all.
Kicking the can down the street, rather, a week hasn't solved that problem. We're still going to be faced with being around the funeral of this and still having to react to it in some way. Maybe people are going to be even more, in fact, people will be even more annoyed that they had a weekend of football taken away from them for what I can gather is absolutely no reason, absolutely no fathomable reason as I sit here. And two, let's see if your thing here that we're trying to get across here is so politically and socially contentious that's a strong possibility that will happen at certain games. Hearts have already done it, right? So it's not just Celtic. Hearts have already interrupted the minute silence and we're all fighting with each other. Some were singing God Save the Queen. Mm. Some were shouting at each other. Some were fighting and all that. That happened at Tynecastle, never mind Celtic. So if your thing here is likely to cause so much contention among just the general football-going public, maybe think about what it is in the first place then. Yeah. Maybe think about what that thing is and why we're forcing people to observe it.
It's maybe what you're saying is keep politics out of football.
Yeah.
Don't have a minute of silence at the game. Just keep the politics out of the football. Melee, anything else to add?
Oh, it's easy to go, it's going to be Celtic and Liverpool, but, well, I think there'll be a lot more and a lot more teams that maybe people will be shocked by, because honestly, seeing the reaction after this, is there going to be a lot of grounds that completely observe a minute's silence over this? I very much doubt it.
And at the end of the day, cares? You should be allowed to protest these things if you want. We apparently live in a healthy democracy, and if people want to go to a football ground and they want to boo or they want to let their feelings known about this sort of thing, then you can't just cancel games in an effort to avoid that. And then also, there's like an insidious thing that I think, where who's setting the agenda here? Well, it's the people who, right, well, we need to respect this and there must be proper. And why is that the agenda? The agenda should be the games go ahead and the way people react is the way people react.
Well, I started this by saying it was panic, and I firmly believe that, because Scottish, well, and English football as well, which you can maybe more understand if people are into that kind of thing down here. I know they are up here, but maybe more so down there. Football in this scenario has come across a little bit like the person who turned up to the party in fancy dress, not really knowing that that wasn't the vibe, because I feel like the whole world, the whole of Britain anyway, has been gearing up to this event for decades now. I mean, it was 96, right? So we're gearing up to this, and the whole time all the jokes were like, oh, a couple of weeks off, it's going to be full North Korea. It's going to be like, I mean, obviously this predates the COVID lockdown, that kind of that attitude towards it. Oh, it's going to be like, not everything's going to be shut and all that. And then nothing happened. Nothing happened at all. Everything was open. Nobody was after work at all, as far as I know. And then football just jumped the gun and went like, well, we're off. How could we imagine having football on this occasion, on this day of days? Why would we even dream of disrespecting the country like this?
Meanwhile, the ruggers is on, the golf's on. Horse racing's on, darts, bowls, tiddlywinks, chess, everything you can imagine is on.
All the dignified sports.
All the dignified sports, just the one that the working class people like that got cancelled so they can appreciate. I did watch, just to end on this, I did watch a wee clip of I saw it on TikTok with King Charles. By the way, anytime someone says King Charles, I immediately think they're going to say Spaniel after
a wee
it.
A dog.
King Charles Spaniel, he met Liz Truss, who is the new PM, and he said, I think his exact words were, this is the day I've been dreading, but we all just need to get on with it. And I thought, if he's saying that,
he's more.
Open the gates. Let us mourn our heads of state.
It's
his mum. And he's like, we just need to get on with it. Meanwhile, the SPFL, no.
He could barely keep the smile off his face. I've been promoted.
Couldn't wait to get his chubby little fingers on that crown.
Good news and bad news.
Yeah, so there's good news and irrelevant news.
It's going to be, well, for Britain or the world's weirdest football team, this is a chance for them to stop that nonsense of hanging a picture in their dressing room. But they won't,
no.
Of course.
I saw a debate where they were like, what do we do with the portrait of the Queen? Do we keep it up? Or do we put up the portrait of the new king next to the new queen? And I thought, no, you can't. Because queens and kings go back thousands of years. So if you're going to do that, then you need to find a picture of all the other ones that I don't know the name of. So that for continuity's sake, you need to make your minds up very clearly here. Or just don't have a picture of the queen up in the dressing room.
Simple as tidier, isn't it?
It's so weird. It's so weird. Anyway, from the world's most successful football team to the world's most successful football team, for real though.
For Real.
From Royal to Real, which is Spanish for Royal.
Is it? Yes, well, it is. Real Madrid came to Celtic Park. They did end up beating us, Stephen, 3-0. But Melly, I could not be prouder of my team because we lost, but we lost on our own terms.
Yeah, and that's what we asked for last week. I think going into the game, we were all confident. And I mean, Stephen spoke about it, and at the match, he said, look, this is all we can ask. We are going into a game against Real Madrid, and we think we can get something here. We think we can go out there and win, draw. Imagine we had a one on last week after the week we had, but it wasn't to be. And look, as what you're saying, you're proud of the team because we didn't just go there and look, did all right, avoided an absolute shellacking. We went and played football and went at them and matched them. Potentially the better team in the first half. And then they came out and decided we are really going to play this half instead of just playing. And boy, oh boy, I have seen a lot of teams playing against Celtic. This isn't the best team player-wise, but the most ruthless and clinical team I've ever seen. They didn't create many clear-cut chances, but the ones they did create, they took. And I was just like, when you can sort of decompress after the game, you go, well, that was pretty special from them, because creating one or two chances and they bagged every one of them. They played very well, but probably could have played better. You're like, that is a proper team.
Stephen, one thing I'm trying to get across here is it wasn't a, we weren't like heroic in defeat. And that is not to say that that was a like a criticism, but heroic in the defeat suggests that you went and you were the plucky underdogs and you threw yourself in front of the ball and you were clearing things off the line and you were holding on by the skin of your teeth, and by God, the bloody boys, they were so close. No, no, we took on Real Madrid toe-to-toe, looked them in the eye, played our football, didn't compromise our style, gave them something to think about. A lot of our players wouldn't have looked, Rhea Hatate would not have looked out of place in that Real Madrid team on the night. Callum McGregor, there's a couple of players that we'll go on to talk about. And it wasn't like plucky underdogness, it was we belong here, we deserve to be in this company.
Oh yeah, it was a great performance. For I mean, I don't want to get carried away. Of course it was a defeat, and a relatively heavy defeat at home, something we're not accustomed to. We're not really...
Is it though? Is, I mean, teams lose 3-0 to Real Madrid all the time.
Well, I just mean on the bare numbers of it, like, losing 3-0 at home is never a great thing, which I just wanted to kind of temper what I was saying a wee bit, because I started by saying it was a great performance, which, you know, context is important here. It was Real Madrid. With games like that, you need a lot of things to go your way. But Celtic did their part in it. They played their part in that game. They took the game to Real Madrid. I watched it back since, it feels like ages ago since this game, because we had some football cancelled at the weekend, which I've already spoken about. It feels like about a month ago we played Real Madrid. So I've watched it back, and I was kind of mentally taking notes. I was like, right, very early on, we've pressed Real Madrid into making a mistake. Thibaut Courtois booted the ball right at the park. There was that, right? Then Abada had a chance. It was deflected wide. And then I was like, quite a good start. And I looked at the clock. It was 27 seconds. 27 seconds on the clock when both of those things had happened. So I thought, right, maybe I've just sort of, I've overdone it in my head. But in fairness to Celtic, it was basically the whole half.
It took
the game to them the entire half. And what I mean by it, if you compare this to the Barcelona game from 10 years ago now, and I said many years ago, it was 10 years ago now. If you compare it to that game, what you need on occasions like this when you're playing such a good team is for a lot of things to go your way. Boy. You maybe need for one or two of their players to just not quite click. You're maybe you need for that team to miss one or two of their chances, one or two of their easy chances. Mel, you've already said they simply just didn't do that. They scored the ones they got. And the fact of the matter is, on the night, I don't think they had a single, even mediocre performance at all. Having watched it back now, every single player on the park for them was excellent. Some more than others, which we might get into as well. But I think nothing really happened for Celtic. We didn't get any breaks. Celtic happened to Real Madrid. Is my point here. They created chances in the first half, hit the post as well. Dyson Maeda in the second half had a decent chance as well. The thing is, scored one of them, it might have just made them angry and they could have taken over again, but that's not how it felt at the time. It didn't feel like that at all. In the stadium, we felt, if we can just go ahead here, that's something to cling on to. That's something to get behind. It just didn't happen for us on the night, sadly.
Well, I think we're brushing over these chances and we're saying, oh, if this happened and that happened, and I think really these are the crux to it, because I know it is a cliche, but I think that's the story of the game for me, because the performance was there. Yep. The team performance was there. The individual performances was there. The work rate was there. I heard a stat somewhere. I tried to find it before we came on. I couldn't find it. I heard Celtic collectively as a team ran 10k further than Real Madrid in that game. Really? So the press was there. Everything that you wanted to see for Celtic was there. The chance creation was there. There was a few players I thought who could have performed better, but we missed our chances. And you simply cannot expect to beat a team like Real Madrid and miss those chances, because when Real Madrid get the chances, like you say, they put them away. Now, they didn't put all the chances away. Made some good tackles. I nearly called him Fraser Foster, made a good save, but it was very Foster-esque, the save he made. And we just missed it. I think Abada had probably two. McGregor hits the inside of the post and it's no in the back of the net. Now, he said, we got to talk to him on the At The Match podcast, patreon.com/20minutetimes. And he says, I don't know how that stayed out. You mean, you don't know how that stayed out? And then Maeda, you cannot miss a chance like that falls to Maeda, or that one of the second chance that Abada got, and expect to beat Real Madrid. You just can't do it.
This is my whole point. It's like you need some of those to go in. You need something, the old cliche, something to go in off your arse, and you hope that they hit the post.
Yeah.
They hit the post. They're getting frustrated. They're creating chances and misses them. They're maybe getting a little bit frustrated that they're not beating this European minnow that they're coming up against. No one in the Champions League for 5 years. That's what you're hoping for. But we didn't get any of these things, which is the unfortunate thing. I have to be realistic. You do need all of these things to go your way when you're playing against Real Madrid, even at home. I know we're big club and all that, but that doesn't win you games against teams that can. I mean, they made substitutions. They brought in Eden Hazard, who was 2 or 3 years ago was one of the best players in Europe. They brought on Rudiger because they got an injury, and he is a Champions League winner, not with Real Madrid. They bought a Champions League winner to come into this team and who didn't start. That's what you're up against. And for we just didn't get any of the breaks. And I'm not talking about just lucky things here and there on the pitch, the break of the ball around that. I'm talking about these big key moments that just didn't go our way.
And we kind of ran out of fuel, and as far we ran out of ammunition as far as the missing the chances went, Melly, because see when we're playing at home, I think we got 6 shots on goal or 4 shots on goal, and Madrid got 6 and ended up scoring 3, then we got 4 and scored none right on target. When we're playing anyone else at home, we can afford to miss those chances because we know we're going to get 12, 13, 14 shots on target, sometimes up to 25 shots on goal, you know, on and off target. But you're not going to get that against Real Madrid. I don't want to labour the point too much, but all I'm trying to do now is illustrate that's the gulf. The difference between what we're up against every week is, Ako missed that, it's all right. And I'm not saying the player, I'm not accusing the players of that. They know. Abada knows when he misses that chance, he might not get another one for the whole game. Maeda knows when you miss 4 yards, you're probably not going to get another one. And it's just that's the sort of gulf that we need to overcome. We need to be ruthless.
Yeah, it's the levels, isn't it? We say this all the time. It's about that this wee learning curve that unfortunately we're having to learn on the job right now. We're in it. We don't have a year to bed into this Champions League. You're in and you need to start winning.
Do you think that's managerial? Do you think it's players, I suppose, I'm getting to? Because Andrew would say, well, my system kind of worked here, but the players that it failed to just couldn't get the finish. Whereas when it falls to the Real Madrid players, they know they only need one chance half the time. Right, gone.
I don't know if it's about having one chance. I just think it's these guys are better at what they do than Celtic are. And what does Celtic do about that? Nothing. The reason every player's at Celtic is because they're not at that level. They want to get to that level, so they need to go through this to maybe get to that. This will be one where maybe players will have to have a look at themselves and go, look, I think I played really well there, but maybe could I improve on my finishing? Could I improve on my passing? Juranovic might think I might need to scan a bit more, be more aware of what's around me. Every player will have learned so much from that game, more than they have learned have played in 38 Scottish games last season. And this is what you want to aspire to. Every player out there will want to go, do you know what? I think I can play at this level regularly and try and get there. The thing about the finishing is, yes, maybe we missed one or two chances, but what do you do about that? Well, you can't replicate that in any way. So if a player misses a chance, it happens. Maeda's one's probably the one you think, he's got to do better. If Kyogo or Jota missed that, I don't think a lot's made of it, but because some people doubt Maeda's technical ability, sometimes there's a bit more made of it. But at the end of the day, he was in the position, it just didn't work out. And look, you can go on about we didn't take these chances, but we created these chances, and that's probably better than not missing them, of course it is. But if you're there making these chances against these teams, it's going to come at some point. It just we didn't get the break that night.
I think Melly says, like, what do you do about these missed chances? And really, there's not an awful lot you can do, because before the game, one of my concerns was Abada, right? And look, people get very defensive about Abada, and he's a good young player and his contribution's brilliant. But I thought, his crossing's not great, and we're not going to get many opportunities to get the ball in the box.
Yeah.
And if it's going down his side all the time and he's missing crosses, I'm going to be quite frustrated watching that. And then I thought to myself, well, he's more instinctive. Yeah. You know, Abada's good coming at the back post, hitting it, quite instinctive finisher. And I just worried that too many good chances would break down when they got to Abada. And that's kind of what happened with him, right? However, to answer Melly's question, what do you do about that? Well, the other option was Maeda, and he misses a sitter as well. So really, there wasn't a great deal we could have done about it.
I know, you could argue that if Abada had been in the same position, which is not how it works. That's not how football works. They don't have the exact same instincts for picking up positions. You could argue, though, if you just transplanted Abada into that chance, it's probably in the back of the net, isn't it? Because that's what he's good at. That's what he's really good at. I would defend Maeda, though, because I think that chance is... it's close range, but it's quite hard to take, because Juranovic is, he's not even fizzed across. He has basically aimed a shot at Maida's feet. It's not even in front of him where you could stick out a toe. It's directly between his feet, and he can't organise his feet quick enough because it's been rattled into him. So
I think
a chilling image.
I think Maida's quite good with the ones he doesn't have to think about. The ones he has to think about, and he has time that he maybe gets it a bit wrong.
Abada as well. I mean, Abada had a big chance early on, not the one that was deflected wide, but I think that may have been on target actually when you watch it back, but he had a big chance where he was not so much clean through, but he shot from quite far out, basically straight at Courtois. And I thought, wait, that's not the kind of thing you want Abada on to do. You want him to be on the end of things. But I thought that was slightly, I mean, the guy's 20 years old playing in his first Champions League game.
I guess one of the best goalkeepers.
My main thought there was that's very naive to think you're going to beat Courtois from that angle, from that distance. I don't think there was ever any chance of him scoring that. But again, we're probably going to end up talking a lot about it tonight. It's about learning, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And look, that team, I don't want to come across all pure tin pot and celebrating the fact that we've lost at home at Real Madrid. But again, we have to be realistic here. We were never going to win that game now that we've seen the way it played out, right? Celtic were never going to actually win it. But for me, the most important thing is that...
Now that we've seen how it played out, incidentally, I want to just reaffirm that point because it seems like something that people might pick you up wrongly on.
Yeah, well, my overall point is that I went to that game really confident that we're going to take it, and that doesn't marry up with what actually happened in the game because Real Madrid are just simply much better. They're much better fighter than us, as Ace Ventura to... That must be a rare quote from Ace Ventura to When Nature Calls.
Yeah, I think we've actually used that one in this podcast before.
I'm almost certain. But yeah, I was really confident going to the game, and really that's all I can ask. Melly's already said that's all I can ask of a Celtic team because we've been doing this podcast a long time and we've had a lot of European games, even Champions League games back in the day. It feels weird to say that. It's been so long since we've actually done Champions League games on here. But I was actually confident, and when we were doing it back then, the kind of running... like kind of tee-hee we had about the Champions League was, oh, we're going to get gubbed there. I didn't feel like that at all. But with what Ange was talking about before the game, I have to sort of reaffirm my belief in what he was saying. He was talking about how it was a chance to actually test yourself. And by test yourself, that's not just by turning up on the pitch as with a team better than you. That's not testing yourself. Inherently testing yourself is playing the way you want to play football, playing the way you believe is the best opportunity for you to win the game, and doing that against a team that the world thinks will crush you, and trying to put on a performance. That's what gives me confidence, and that's what really was the test. And we will learn an awful lot more from doing that. These players will learn an awful lot 100%. More from doing that than playing 5-4-1 and booting the ball long and trying to play for fouls in the edge of the box and all that kind of stuff. And that's my whole point about I don't want to really drag us back into that tedious Scottish football thing, right? But it was never about like trying to beat Celtic and playing and going toe-to-toe with them football-wise and the budgets and all that kind of stuff. But Celtic have proven that you can do it. I lost the game, of course, they lost the game fairly comfortably in the second half. We all stayed behind that night. We stayed behind singing the manager's name because of what Celtic had shown us out there. Not because we're daft happy clappers and we're just happy with anything we see out there. It's because we're proud of the performance that Celtic put in against arguably the best team in the world.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Manscaped product alert. You asked for it and they listened. Our friends at Manscaped just brought the Ultra Smooth package to Europe. Everyone knows by now that the Lawnmower 4.0 is the best electric shaver for your balls. But if you're looking for a closer shave or prefer to go completely bare down there, off-putting, then the Ultra Smooth package is the perfect set. It's time to shave that bush of yours, off-putting again, and get right to the roots by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code Tim's.
That's right, Jamie. The Ultra Smooth package is a specialised groin shaving kit, yep, to help you buff, protect and smooth your most sensitive areas. I'm talking crop shaver razor, crop exfoliator and crop gel. Men, you no longer have to borrow your lady's razor for that precise trim. It's time to get up close and personal with the best tools for the job, the Ultra Smooth package from Manscaped. It's just a ball sack trimmer, Jamie.
Yes, it is, Stephen. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code TIMS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code TIMS at manscaped.com. Smooth out your fellas with the new Ultra Smooth package, really off-putting, from the fellas at Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
It's the hope you're talking about, with confidence, and that's truly the gift that Ange has given us. is
your greatest gift of all.
You're going up and you're coming in with hope, and you're coming in with, you know what, my team might be able to do something today. And I heard it might have been, I can't remember what radio station it was, but I think it might have been an English one, and they were out in Glasgow and they were interviewing people, and every single Celtic fan was like, no, I think we'll take something off them today. And you might look back and you go, it was a wee bit misguided, no way we're going. But I don't think a Celtic victory was as far off as you think. That game could have ended a number of different ways. Sure, you know, high Vegas odds, 9-10-1 that Real Madrid were going to win that game every time. But Celtic definitely had a chance of getting something out of that game. And going into the game with the hope and the ambition and the, I don't know the word I'm looking for, Melly, so I'm just going to come to you.
Yeah, well, I get what you're saying, even though you didn't actually say it. But it's looking back at it, look, what Stephen said, like, Celtic went there and they played their game. So what was missing from the game? And I kind of feel just that we need a bit of everything to get something out of these games. And we didn't have that luck, maybe that break. Real Madrid's goal, they get a break in the middle of the park for one of them. There's a bit of luck in some of their goals. But thinking back to the last sort of big result Celtic had in the Champions League, the Man City game, because look, it's been 9 years since we won a Champions League game at home. The Man City game, the first goal, potentially offside, it hits off Dembele's chest after a header. Kieran Tierney's goal takes a massive deflection and it's down as an OG, and then the cross comes in and Dembele does a piece of magic. Celtic didn't really create any more chances than they did against Real Madrid, but we got three, we deserved the goals, but we got three bits that it all fell for us, and we still didn't come away with a victory that night. And the Real Madrid game, we just simply didn't come up with that. It didn't happen for us, but we did absolutely everything else right, because as you're saying, Jamie, I can't remember Carter Vickers or Jens making big last-ditch tackles. There was nothing cleared off the line. There was no absolute period of pressure where you thought, we are on the ropes here, we need to get out of here. I didn't think that was Celtic. I thought when we got the ball, we tried to play our way out and done it well. It's just didn't go for us on the night. And I think that's why everybody's sort of accepting of this. I was like, right, maybe finish a chance or two. But Real Madrid, it wasn't as if they'd brought a second team. It was their full strength team, and as Stephen said, they all came out and they played well. Like, even some of the players you think, well, we can maybe target the fullbacks. They're not world-class players. They're not household names. They are very, very good players. They were class, absolutely class. And you're just looking at every player on that Madrid team. And there was times in the game where Celtic had a bit of an edge and the crowd was on them. Didn't face a single player in that Real Madrid team. Not one of them looked as if they were letting the ball slip away or scared to get on the ball. They all just looked like, we do this all the time. And they just kept passing the ball about and trying to frustrate Celtic. And you're like, this is where they've already learned everything they need to know. But Celtic are at the very start of that journey. So let's just enjoy it now.
I know, when you've got guys like Tony Cruz, who's won almost everything there is to win three times, and Modric in midfield, it's going to take a lot to sort of spook these guys. But I think one of the other telling things about the game, Stephen, is when you want to single Celtic players out for praise, you're looking at Celtic's more attacking players. You know what I mean? It's not, wow, what a defensive performance. You're looking at Matt O'Reilly. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, every week that goes by, that guy's just looking every single inch an absolute superstar. You're looking at Rio Hatate. Unbelievable. Some of the passing on display from Hatate. Callum McGregor, every time he's faced with a challenge, he takes it up. Giakoumakis, I thought one of the unsung heroes of that game. The Real Madrid centre-halves did not like dealing with that guy.
No, Militao.
Not for 1 minute did they like dealing with him. And I actually thought he probably caused them more problems than Kyogo, because Kyogo maybe plays a way they're more used to playing. Yak, I nearly called him Diego Costa there. But
he's gazumped by Wolves, by the way. Should have brought him home.
But yeah, we don't need him. We've got Giakoumakis. But the performance he put in was sensational.
He and Militao had a bit of a ding-dong battle, one of those kind of old-fashioned big guy up front versus the big guy at the back battles, and Militao went off injured,
so did Benzema.
Benzema went off as well, but Rudiger comes on in the second half, and again, as I said, Champions League winner with Chelsea just the year before Real Madrid won it. So it's not exactly a massive step down in quality as well, but Giakoumakis deserved. I saw the kind of the other side of the big clubs get all the decisions thing, if you know what I mean. Look, Celtic and Rangers are often accused of getting all the big decisions in Scotland when you get the diddy teams, piping up. But I saw a little bit of that. I thought
there was a lot of that.
I thought Giakoumakis was harshly treated a couple of times just by being physical with their centre half.
Sometimes I feel he doesn't help himself, but
no.
There was one he controlled it on his chest in the box and just theatrically froze himself down. Mate, you had the ball, you don't need to do this. And plus, if I can see it for here, the ref can see it.
I know. Obviously, we'll talk about individual performances, and we already are, but the context of this is you look at the Real Madrid team, their right side is unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. If you include Modric in that, who appears kind of just about everywhere, but it is ostensibly their right-sided central midfielder of a three. You've got Valverde ahead of him and Carvajal behind him. Their right side was absolutely astonishing on the night. I thought they were the three
best
players.
That's the bit he's probably target, because I didn't really know much about Valverde, and he's probably the best player in the park.
Glanced across the stats afterwards, if you've got right, middle, left of the channels that you can attack down, over 50% of their attacks and their most productive attacks were down their right side for the game as well. So it was obviously a thing that they're used to as well. I thought Greg Taylor was great again, just typically really brilliant, especially in the face of what he was up against that night as well. Jota and Abada have a lot to learn at that level. I think it's difficult for the creative flair players to stand out in a game like that, where you're really up against it and you're really up against a team that are much better than you and come up against better players than you can possibly offer as well. But in terms of their... I don't think Abada got past his man once. And do you know what? I'm not even criticising it. I don't even expect them to get past a guy like that at all. I mean, what are you really going to get? You're maybe going to get past them once or twice before being closed down by maybe one of the centre-halves anyway. So that's how good they are. But I think they need to maybe work on their defensive...
Yeah, definitely.
The defensive side of things, because...
Did you think...
We did suffer quite a bit down the flanks, and it's just... Juranovic and Taylor can only do so much before they're being double teamed and doubled up on, tripled up on, and all that. So it's very difficult if your wingers are getting a little bit maybe spooked, is maybe the wrong word, right? But I think they didn't really show the same level of confidence that they do in domestic football.
I think Jota showed a lot of that. Yeah. What do you think? I think two things happened. I think Abada just had a sort of, I suppose it's maybe faint praise a wee bit, but he had a very typical Abada performance. Yeah. He had a, compared to how we're used to seeing him, like in the Rangers game, for example.
He hubbed at half time, so that's it was a story.
Well, it was tales, but he wasn't like awful. Whereas you're looking at Jota, and it's probably because of the past record that he's got, Stephen. I think the occasion got a wee bit too much of Jota. And it wasn't just so much a case of coming up there against a world class defenders and they're nicking the ball off him. It was no showing for the ball, or maybe getting rid of it a wee bit quicker than he usually does. Instead of taking the guy on, he would take him on and beat him. He would beat him, and then towards the end of the first half, he was giving the ball away. This passing was a bit poor, and I just think he just needs to believe in himself a wee bit more. He just needs to believe he belongs at this level. I think that was maybe what held Jota back.
Yeah, again, I can't help but just go back to the fact that these players will learn a lot from that. Yeah. A huge, huge amount from that game. That's not to say that they're going to take it directly into the games in the Champions League right away. This whole Champions League group will be a huge learning curve for these players. There's no doubt about that. But I thought Jota came into it a wee bit. I thought he put in a couple of decent crosses, a couple of nice balls in towards Jackie Marcus. And again, what you're up against here is it's not only superior ability, but they're just a little bit more street savvy than Celtic are. There's a fair chance if a centre half gets into a tussle with Giakoumakis in the box and goes down, the ref's going to blow for that every single time. So Jota was pinging in a couple of crosses. All of a sudden, Giakoumakis has got a guy lying at his feet, and the ball just goes out the other side. So I'm not making accusations of cheating or anything like that. This is just what happens, and Celtic aren't used to it at all.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think the two wide players could have played better, but I've not really got a problem with how they perform going forward. It was more how they were going back the way. I think they could have gave more protection to their fullbacks, and it was something I noticed in the Rangers game that Juranovic and somebody else, I can't remember who, had to shout at Abada a couple of times during that game to track back, and then a couple of minutes he gets subbed off despite scoring two goals. But that's why I'd have maybe started Maeda with Abada's form. But I just feel if Jota and Maeda, it's going to be difficult no matter what. I think they gave as good as they could, but they could do so much better. But there's no real excuse for not working back the way. If you're not having a good game, I always say make sure the guy you're up against has a terrible game. Their two fullbacks were really good, and that's because a lot of the time they had space or the run wasn't matched. So when Real Madrid went beyond them, they didn't quite go back the way as quick as they should, and it meant it opened up space for somebody else, and that's where Celtic were carved open a couple of times. So that's the only criticism I would have of them. Could have done a wee bit better going forward, but going back the way had to work a lot harder for me.
Right, I think we've got the criticisms out of the way. Let's talk about some positives. Matt O'Reilly, Stephen.
Oh, fantastic. What a player. There was an occasion in the first half where it might sound a bit like OTT saying that players wouldn't look out of place in that team, but I don't think it's massively exaggerating. Could they play at that level for the consistency throughout a season that it takes to play for a club like Real Madrid? I doubt it. But on a one occasion that you can go into a game like that and look like you belong on the pitch with these players, because we're talking about Luka Modric and the previously mentioned Toni Kroos, and I thought Tchouaméni, if that's how you pronounce it, I thought he was excellent as well. They brought on that Camavinga, who we've played against before. I think he's only 19. He looked really good as well. So that's the kind of midfield company you're keeping there. But there was an occasion quite early on where Matt O'Reilly just took one of those wee shuffles where he doesn't touch the ball, lets it come across him, just sort of drops his shoulder, and someone just ran past him, and all of a sudden there was a load of space. And I thought, do you know what? You're quite good at football. But that was just one of those occasions where I thought, you look like you belong at this level. Level is slightly subjective here. It's not necessarily Real Madrid, but he belongs in the Champions League. I don't think that was ever in doubt, right enough.
No, I think a lot of teams will be watching him. Especially after that performance, especially after Hatate's performance. He was just sitting there, just looking like, at times, he was looking like peak Luka Modric. Do you know what I mean? Just sitting back, pinging balls. You see the one where did he take a throw-in for Greg Taylor? And without even looking,
Juranovic,
and without even looking, he just volleys it right across to Jota.
Yeah, so it's went viral, but it is like sumptuous to watch, and it's an absolutely delicious pass. There's still things in his game. I thought he could, some of his positional play was a wee bit, but again, he's learning. But when the guy gets
you get that with him, don't you? He's a bit of a maverick,
and I'm happy to accept that because he can do that pass out there. Because looking about, well, probably every midfielder on the pitch could have actually done that because they're all class, but it's something we don't see very often. And like, you're looking for these guys, like, make a mistake, get on it again. Every single one of them in the midfield three did. I thought Celtic's midfield three were brilliant. Like, Hatate, O'Reilly, but Callum McGregor again. Like, for a guy that's maybe been there and done it before, to come in here and captain Celtic in the Champions League and put in that performance against that stat. And that's not the first time he's went up against Modric or like that and not looked out of place. So the guy is a class act, and all that was missing from him was that goal. But spoke to him after the game, he's like, I don't know how it didn't get in. And that's just that wee millimetre or two slice of luck you need in these games that we simply didn't get. But can't fault any performance in midfield.
Hatate's pass and Joe Hart's save, I think, were the two. I mean, losing 3-0 at home, no goals are in like to celebrate. They were the two occasions that I jumped up in like awe at what I'd just witnessed. I mean, one of those, it was when you see Joe Hart's save back, it's a great save, but it's the goalkeeping cliche. You'd expect him to make it. He just came out and made himself big. But again, that's not what it felt like at the time. That's not what it felt massive at the time. A chance that it might have been barred off anyway, because if that indeed is a verb, barred, but because it was, it may be marginally offside as he just sort of crossed the halfway line, maybe slightly too early. But the save felt amazing, and the Hatate's pass, honestly, astonishing. It was out to Jota, who was in loads of space, but to take that on the volley over your own shoulder, absolutely. He's been doing that more and more recently, pinging out great passes, just that right onto Abada's toes, just to take it right into his stride. But that one was the best of the lot. That's a phenomenal pass.
How do you feel about clapping off Luka Modric? There's been a lot of moaning about that online, and I thought... I don't mind it. In fact, are you going to be so po-faced? Do you have to be so po-faced about everything? I mean, it's at the end of the day, Luka Modric is one of these world-class footballers, still a bit of an underdog, kind of. Do you know what I mean? He's existed in a period where, I don't mean he's an underdog insofar as he's rubbish. What I mean is he's existed in a period where there's been several very great players, but you delete them and Luka Modric would be easily one of the best players in the world.
Is he the Andy Murray of this era in football?
Kind of. Do you know that's it? You know, he's
tennis this week, is it?
No boxing analogy so far this week. I was working up to who were we in this analogy? If we continue the Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis, were we officially the underdogs? Were they Mike Tyson and we were Leona Lewis?
Yeah.
Which I would never let happen, by the way. Leona Lewis is an angel and he would batter her. Bloodbath.
You see someone tweeted as a mate, did you see Michael Owen made a boxing reference? And I thought, no, but I wish I did.
Was it good?
I don't know.
Because the crucial thing is ours are really bad, so he couldn't have copied us.
Well, not if Michael Owen made it. He probably doesn't watch boxing. There certainly wasn't a Rocky one anyway. But back to my point. So when you're clapping, look at, he's a fairly inoffensive guy. I just thought, there's nothing wrong with this man. Guy, you just stop being so po-faced.
I sat down and applauded him because you can appreciate good performances, you can appreciate good players, but we seen both that night. It wasn't as if people were just clapping because he's Luka Modric. So you watch the guy and say, this guy's going to be good. And he was better than that. He was an absolute midfield masterclass.
I just love the efficiency of movement with Luka Modric. It's wonderful. And it's not just how much he runs with his body. It's the ball comes in and he's just like, bump. And he's played it through to something. You're like, this guy's unbelievable.
37 the other day.
37 playing at the highest
out there
level
smoking
still.
A King Eddie.
He's playing it
bone dry as well. Under that.
Yes.
It's been a long time since I've heard that.
There you go.
It's a class player just putting in a class performance at the highest level. So I think you can appreciate that as well. And just seeing him there going, do you know what? That was unbelievable. You're seeing him there, and as you're saying, every movement he makes, it's all efficient. He's never wasting energy. He's never wasting a pass. You're like, wowee, that was impressive. I wasn't
too wowee.
I wasn't too impressed with
jumping jellicles. That was
goody gumdrops. Look at Modric's playing. Sound like one of the fucking railway children.
Another reference for the kids.
All right, Bino.
Enid Blyton over here.
But I wasn't too impressed with clapping off Benzema when he goes
full
off
of money mints. Anyway, sorry, mate.
I wasn't impressed with clapping off Benzema after going off injured. He didn't do anything, did he?
No, I don't. That is taking it a wee bit too far. Stephen,
lashings and lashings of applause. Did I don't think it matters either way. Like, there's these two entrenched camps who are like, oh, you want to make the stadium a fearful place to come? I don't think it didn't affect him, clearly. But like booing him, you could have booed him all day and it wouldn't have affected his performance. And likewise, at clapping him, I don't think really affects anything whatsoever. It's not for, I don't do it. It's not for me. Not because I'm sitting there, sitting in my hands, I refuse to applaud. It just doesn't enter my head to applaud an opposition player. I don't have a problem with it at all, as long as it's no over the top. I don't want it getting pure soccer AM about it. Mm. Every time he plays a pass, we're like, shit, oh. He plays a two.
Tell me your own reaction in the sand every time Modric plays a pass. Oh, my God, absolute limbs.
Yeah, that can be the thumbnail.
No, look, I wasn't like up, standing up, courtesying the guy, but I just thought, class, absolute class, and a bit of a polite applause. The atmosphere at Celtic Park, when the, I just felt my overriding emotion was, it's so good to be back.
Oh,
yeah.
Because this, sorry, but this team, and especially this manager, deserve this stage.
No doubt. I said on our At The Match podcast that we did immediately after the game, well, during the game and immediately afterwards, that when I went in on my own, Melly had to go and get his press pass, you know, because he's important like that. He had to go and get his press pass for after the game for that little bit of content that we got after the game. But I went in on my own. I was just standing there, and they were playing clips on the big screen of previous Champions League big moments, like the Nakamura free kick, Scott McDonald scoring and all that. And I'm like, I'm getting emotional here. I genuinely was. I'm not just saying that for some hilarious banter here. I genuinely could feel like what it was like. And that was proven as well when the absolute eruption of applause happened when the Champions League theme played. Mm. The theme played and the place absolutely erupted like a goal had been scored. I've never heard anything like it. And I've seen people who were just there as neutral, you know, just journalists who were there covering for like ESPN or BT or whatever it was, had said they'd never seen anything like it, but just the applauding of a theme playing.
Yeah.
And that's what added to it.
The North Cove banner, tribute to Leprechaun in the Hood, which was absolutely...
I've seen Leprechaun in the Hood, yeah.
Nah, it's not bad. absolutely tremendous.
Never seen Raging Bull, but I have seen Leprechaun in the Hood.
What have I never seen? Nothing immediately comes to mind, but there's several good films I haven't seen. Platoon. There's one. Never seen Platoon. Hey, listen, I've not done this properly for so long. If you like what we do on this podcast and you like the podcast and you would like some more features, some more videos, some more stuff centred around matches, reaction podcasts, patreon.com/20minutetims. It keeps this podcast going. It gives you extra content. It supports us and lets us do what we do best, and that's cover Celtic. That's patreon.com/20minutetims. There'll be a link in the bio. And if you're watching this and you've not subscribed on YouTube, please hit subscribe. We would really, really appreciate it. Any final thoughts, Stephen, on the Real Madrid clash? I mean, we've got Shakhtar up next.
Yes.
We'll be doing some Patreon stuff for that, obviously. Marin Šved scored twice.
He did.
Melly's shuddering.
Going to score again.
He scored again at the weekend.
He did.
Now, it's not something that surprised me, because for some reason I do remember when we signed him the first time, the feedback from his coach was, I don't know why this kid leaves the country, because every time he plays for a foreign team, he can't do it. And I think he's left. He's been to the Ukraine. He started in Ukraine, left to go to Seville. It didn't work. Went back to Ukraine, it did work. Left to join us, it didn't work. Now he's back in the Ukraine and it seems to be working for him.
Yeah, what have we learned from that so far? Basically, just never leave the Ukraine.
Unless you're Russian soldiers.
Fucking. Yeah, bit of political satire, a bit of political commentary there.
We don't work on this. This part.
Right. Yes, by the way, I concur. I support that movement. Not the movement into Ukraine, the movement suggested by Jay. Right, yeah, Marin Šved, there's an air of inevitability about this, isn't there? It's the Joe Ingeberg, it's the Harold Brattback, it's the Mo Bangura. Henrik Larsson, of course. Mo Bangura trying to put us out when he was still on the books of the club.
What did Neil Lennon say? If he cares about his career, he won't play that day. Mental. It's not his fault. We loaned him to another club and didn't put a clause in the contract.
No, I don't know. So it seems like everything's gearing towards Marin Šved joining that elite club of superstars who have done that against Celtic, who have flopped for us. We've all sneered at them and they've come back and haunted us in Europe. It's up to Celtic to stop that, because we certainly don't want Marin Šved, because it'll become unbearable about how, you know, we wasted his talent and all that. We gave him an opportunity.
He was rubbish.
Couldn't care less. His attitude was absolutely stinking from every report I've ever heard about the guy. And you know what? Good for him. If he's found a home, which quite literally is his home,
yeah.
and every time he leaves that home, he's no any good, then good. I hope his career starts as of next Monday, not this week.
just having a look at these games, O'Malley, and all the praise that we've just doled out to the Celtic team and how we're proud of them and all that sort of stuff. At the end of the day, there is a competition here that we want to do well in, that we want to progress in, and whilst you're happy to have the performance but a defeat against Real Madrid, picking up no points and losing three goals, you're not going to give that pass throughout the rest of the tournament, because what happens is you're out of the tournament, you don't progress, you don't drop into any other competitions, you're out in your arse and you've got a terrible record. So we need to combine the performance and start picking up points, don't we? And on, more importantly, we have to start picking up points on the road because Shakhtar beating Leipzig sort of threw a spanner on the works for us a wee bit.
It sure did, and look, the Real Madrid game and performance will look silly if we do end up with hardly any, like 0 points, and you just go, well, do you know what, it didn't really matter, because you need to take that performance into the next game. And I believe if we perform like that in the games coming up, we can get something out of it. We have to take the belief out of that game, take the positives and go on there. Shakhtar will be difficult, it's in Warsaw, but Celtic need to target these four games in the middle here between the two Real Madrid games and get points out of them. I think, as we've seen with the Shakhtar game, as you said, teams are going to take points off each other. Celtic need to be doing that. Yes. We need to try and get 8 to 10 points maybe in this, is a very big ask. But even when Celtic get those points, we never seem to go through. Other teams from this country seem to get less than that and go through. So it would be nice to get that slice of luck. So look, Celtic just need to go there and play their game. We can't deviate for that. We need to go there and play our game. And ultimately, if we go a goal down, the game's not over. There's still plenty of time in it, because we are going to concede away from home. Yeah. Just don't let in too many.
One small positive from this weekend's events as well is that we've had a rest. You know, there can't really be any excuses. We didn't have to go and suffer the ignominy of playing against Livingston the weekend.
True, yeah.
So we have had, it must be very rare to go from one Champions League to another. I can't remember the last time that could possibly have happened, with no league games or cup or anything in between. So there is the small positive to take from that anyone who was struggling, Kyogo, I presume, will be back fit, because he came off the bench against Real Madrid. They almost scored as well. I forgot about that one. See, the Jota hit a volleyed cross and then it just kind of hit off Kyogo's knee and basically looped over the far corner. I get one of that could possibly have gone in as well. That's just another one of those sliding doors moments. But we should have players back. Starfelt, I think, will probably be too early for him as well. But other than that, it seems to be a clean bill of health, as they say. Rest of the weekend. We've not spent the weekend getting booted up and down the pitch by Livingston. So hopefully that plays into our favour.
The only thing about the Livingston game being off is I was really looking forward to seeing more of Haksabanovic when I thought he did a good cameo when he came on, and I thought, do you know what, see if we can get him playing and then maybe get some game time, and then we'll see him against Shakhtar, because I just feel like there's going to be a game where he just comes on and it's him and Jota now. Him and Jota, and that's it. I think he's going to be a good player, so I was looking forward to that. Hopefully we'll organise some sort of bounce game or something at the weekend, but I'd really like to see him and just see how he gets on. I was looking forward to that.
Hey, just to finish up, how did Rangers get on in Europe? I missed it.
Well, I was going to say that it is okay, right? It's fine to lose to a European giant. 3-0 is fine. No more than that.
No.
No more than that. You're pushing.
Did they lose
it
4-0?
Yeah.
Again.
Bad week for Rangers fans. And on that, we shall wrap up. Thank you so much for watching and listening.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend.
But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.